Good morning. It is 10:02 a.m. We are here today, September 17, 2021, or September 20, 2021, via Zoom meeting for the motion hearing of OPAPA 21-004 and 21-005 Pacific Data Systems, Inc. versus Department of Education. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J.F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jarek Hernandez and Tirza Pagana. Will appellant PDS please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. For the record, my name is Joshua Walsh. We represent the PDS in this consolidated appeal. Also joining on the Zoom call are Mr. Day and Mr. Artero. Mr. Day's PDS is institutional representative here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GDOE please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. James Steig on behalf of Guam Department of Education, purchasing agency.
Thank you. We may proceed.
Good morning, Council. You guys have flooded me with motions.
Your Honor, I think we solved one of them. Mr. Steak and I, at least on the confidentiality one, we submitted a stipulation. So I think on the confidentiality issue, at least Judge DOE and PDS were able to sort that out.
Okay, great. And I thought it was. I was hoping. Well, anyway, with the number of motions that we have, maybe the order should go in the order that you filed the appellants have their appeal, and that is really on the motion to dismiss, because your appeal complaint or whatever petition discusses the Guam Telecommunication Act and makes reference to a recently filed in 2021 a case against GTA.
So Your Honor, on that issue, I think I do understand that the public auditor wants, your office would like DOE and I, before the merits hearing, to actually provide a joint statement on whether or not the existence of a superior court case that involves GTA divests this body of jurisdiction. It's not a case involving PDS. So PDS has not brought a case at the Superior Court. And to be honest, Your Honor, I have not been able to pull the complete pleadings from the Superior Court on that. But I do expect Mr. Steak and I to be able to provide our perspectives to the OPA on whether or not that court case has bearing. But I do know that DOE filed a motion to dismiss just on the idea that the public auditor's office, and Mr. Steak, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that this office, and from their perspective, doesn't have jurisdiction to even consider whether or not there's a pricing issue at work here. So I think we can address that motion, Judge. But in terms of the active Superior Court case, I think Mr. Steak and I still owe Your Honor a joint statement before the merits hearing on whether or not that divests us of jurisdiction.
You made mention of it in the appellant's opening plea to the OPA, making reference to that case, and how could you have made any representations on that case if you've not seen what's in it? And we have no idea on how much or what that entails.
We reviewed the complaint, Your Honor. I don't know where they are in that litigation, but I can inform this body that complaint is not about this case. That complaint is about the question about their tariff structure and is GTA doing conduct that would, we suggest, implicate their responsibility in this case if DOE were to do an analysis of GTA. But in terms of a straight line connection between some case that would divest this body of jurisdiction, we don't see that, Your Honor. I'll let Mr. Steak weigh in if he thinks that's a separate independent ground to make this case go away. But I do know that the grounds that, so we are articulating in our appeal that DOE didn't do what it needed to do to analyze GTA. Part of what we think DOE needed to do was analyze that. But that case is not.
Them with Mr. Stake. It is his motion. And let me hear it. But I when I reread your opening petition on appeal, I was concerned because that was all of it. All right, Mr. Stake.
Thank you, Your Honor. Okay, so we'll start with the motion to dismiss. So 1 second. Okay, so GDOE moves for dismissal of this appeal on the grounds that PDS's protest requires the OPA to determine if GTA is in compliance with the Guam Telecommunications Act. The OPA has decided an analogous issue already, and the Guam Public Utilities Commission is a proper forum for the appellant's protests and complaints. Excuse me. And the OPA does not have jurisdiction to determine compliance with the Telecom Act. So the first issue that we'll get into is that the PDS's protest itself requires the OPA to determine if GTA is in compliance with the Guam Telecommunications Act. To summarize PDS's arguments, GTA's bid violates the Telecom Act, therefore their price renders them non-responsible, non-responsive. Because of this alleged GTA violations of the Act, PDS challenges the award that GDOE made. So to point directly to PDS's protest items on page 517 of IFB 27 and 607 of IFB 28, PDS states, the services under this procurement are regulated by the Guam Public Utilities Commission. Therein admitting this is regulated by the Guam Public Utilities Commission. Also subject to the Guam Telecom Act, GTA General Exchange Tariff, which is also approved by the Guam Public Utilities Commission. The pricing proposed by GTA does not conform to the GTA tariff filed and approved by the Guam Public Utilities Commission. This is again PDS's first item. Item number three, same page 517 and 607. GTA is in violation of 12 GCA 12205, which is the Telecom Act. The pricing offered by GTA is clearly anti-competitive and in violation of this act. Item four. PDS challenges that GTA's price in their bid form may include gross receipts tax, business privilege tax, that there is a complaint in Superior Court regarding a violation of the Telecom Act. And for these reasons, GTA bid must be rejected. So in summary, these are their grounds for the protest. And all of these allegations require the OPA to investigate and to decide on compliance regarding the Telecom Act. And again, to start out, the main point is that the actual evidence here is the pending litigation. So to get into the issues, the OPA already has decided an analogous case. We cited this in the appeal of JRN Air Conditioning and Refrigeration Inc. The appellant alleged violations of labor laws. The OPA determined that in order to address these violations, it had to determine whether the compliance with the labor laws, and finally that doing so was outside the express authority and jurisdiction of the OPA. The OPA decided that the Guam Department of Labor was the proper forum. Analogous here, we have the Guam Public Utilities Commission. So some rules to cite would be 12 GCA, 12204B. The commission shall have, the Guam Public Utilities Commission shall have the authority and jurisdiction to implement and enforce the provisions of the Telecom Act through rulemakings or orders. 12 GCA 12311. The commission shall investigate claims of violations of the Telecom Act. 12 GCA 12207E, the commission shall issue a final order regarding a complaint of violation of the Telecom Act. The law provides the commission as the proper forum for complaints of the violations of the act and to investigate and issue orders, and not the OPA in this case. The OPA does not have jurisdiction to determine compliance with the Telecom Act. 2 GAR, Division 4, Section 12112, the public auditor shall determine whether a decision on the protest of method selection, solicitation, or award is in accordance with the Guam Procurement Law and IFB Terms and Condition. 5GCA 5703, the public auditor's jurisdiction shall be utilized to promote the integrity of the procurement process and purposes of the procurement law. The issues raised by the appellant were not a part of the method of selection, the solicitation or award was not a part of the procurement law or the IFB. The issues raised regarding compliance with the Act is outside the express purpose and authority bestowed on the OPA by the Guam procurement law. For these reasons, the consolidated appeal should be dismissed. Thank you.
If I may, Your Honor.
Please.
So I think just at the initial point, DOE is referencing the Consolidated Commission Utility Act. There's no exclusive pathway that has to go through the CCU first. Their brief says somebody wants to make a complaint shall file. It actually says may file. There's nothing in the law that says that this, the public auditor's office, cannot examine pricing origin or cannot examine someone's pricing. So the idea that the Utilities Commission is a forum to make complaints about utility tariffs is true, but two statements can be true as well. That can be true, and this body can actually look at pricing. So there's not an exclusive legislative pathway that says you can only do this, sort of the way like federal court, you know, you want to bring a Title VII case, there might be exclusive jurisdiction or a Warren Act case or something. You have to go to one form or the other. So I think just as an initial idea, the idea that there's only one pathway to examine this is not what the law says. Secondly, Your Honor, on the idea that DOE relies on this 2010 JRN decision, where your predecessor said, I'm not going to examine whether or not an offeror's wages or rates are done correctly. That's for DOL to do. That is distinguishable from what exists here. Here, what we're appealing to the public auditor is the idea that DOE put together an RFP an IFP that required its bidders to follow all applicable law. And when DOE received the protest that said one of your bidders, GTA, did not follow applicable law, GTA just is providing a falsely low price because it's not following law, what DOE did in this case was simply say, well, I'm not going to look at it. Which is, if the public auditor looks at page 7 of the J&B decision, the JRN air conditioning, in that case, DOE at least went through the process of trying to determine bidder responsiveness and responsibility by examining whether or not those wages were correct. What happened was, once DOE denied the protest at that level and said, well, we find the wages correct, then the question on appeal was whether or not the wages were correct. That's different than here. What we're urging is that the public auditor tell DOE to do the examination that the law requires, to only give this bid to a responsible responsive offerer. The distinction between DOE in 2010 and DOE in 2021 are stark. In 2010, DOE did do the analysis. Here, DOE simply said, well, somebody gave us a price, and even though our bid says you got to follow applicable law, we're not going to pay attention to that applicable law. And I think that is the distinguishing characteristic here, Your Honor, is that the question is, does an agency like the Department of Education, when it receives bids, when it is suggested to the agency that somebody is providing an illegal, falsely low-priced bid, does DOE get to simply stand back and says, well, that's the price they put in, I'm not looking at it further? Or should DOE be forced to do its job to make sure that the taxpayers are not getting a falsely low priced non-responsible bid? And we provided law, Your Honor, in our brief about how, at least in the federal procurement world, analysis of low bids is just as important as analysis of high bids, because you don't want a falsely low non-responsible bidder to come in and do the work. So we certainly understand that DOE's perspective is that the public auditor doesn't have jurisdiction to review this. I see no law that says that. I do see the public auditor in 2010 declining to do an appeal analysis of whether or not someone's wages were properly set under DOL, because they said, you want to pick a fight about the wages in that, go to the Department of Labor. But at least in that case, the Department of Education did its job. At least in the first instance, it received an appeal and did an analysis of whether or not the wages submitted were falsely low or not. That's all we're asking to do. If DOE wants to hang its motion to dismiss on on the JRM case of 2010, the DOE should at least run through the process the DOE did in 2010 and do its own analysis of the prices before we have to come to the public auditor's office and say that analysis was incorrect. And I hope, and if you don't have any further questions about our opposition, I'm ready to address our motion or let Mr. Steak address what I said. Thank you, Your Honor.
If I may, Your Honor, also he's muted.
I'm just wondering whether or not this office has the capability of being able to analyze rates. I would imagine that maybe we could very easily look at whether or not 925 is 925 or it's 840 an hour. But I don't even know how they do the rates. I mean, I just paid my water bill, and let me tell you, I can't figure out how they figure out what the per kilowatt hour time and all this is. I've never looked at my telephone bill. I'm one of those trust it all and just automatically take it every month. And my niece scolded me at breakfast yesterday when I told her how much I was paying on my telephone thing. And so I'm just wondering, is the analysis of this rate something that the OPA is capable of being doing, or is this something where I know they used to use some company to do some analysis for them, some consulting companies, and I've seen some of their reports. are we thinking about calling in anybody from the PUC to provide analysis that this rate is or is not in compliance?
I don't think that would be necessary, Your Honor, because the rates are we're not making an appeal that says what the rates should be. We're saying that there are published rates. So, you know, my task at a hearing on the merits and in our trial materials in our hearing brief, Your Honor, would be to present to the OPA what the published rate is for these POTS services, the Plano Telephone Services, and the DTS services. So we know what the services are. We know what the Consolidated Commission on Utilities says is the rate for that service. And because that's a very public document, it would be my job and Mr. Day's job to present to you sort of the straight line. Well, this is what the rate is, and here's where GTA's price is below that rate. There's no argument about what the rate should be. That's a published rate. But Your Honor, ultimately, that's why in our appeal, we're concerned the DOE didn't do that step to look at what the published rate was. At least in the JRN case, DOE went to say, okay, what is the 925 or what is the 875? And DOE in that case said, well, I see that somebody submitted $7, but if you add the vacation time in, it comes out to 820. You know, they did that analysis. Here, we're not even asking DOE to do that level of analysis. We just want DOE to look at the published rate. You know, a stamp is, I forget what a stamp is these days, 49 cents, you know, so, or what the established rate for these POTS services is X. So it's a published rate, Your Honor, that we could bring somebody in from the CCU to say that this is what the published rate is. But as a public document, Your Honor, I would like to believe that Mr. Steak and I and Dewey could agree that this is what the published document says and that we could present that. But I think this office is fully capable of looking at that. But I think importantly, DOE as the procuring agency was fully capable of looking at that as well. If they were capable in 2010 to look at the wages in the JRM matter, they were capable of going onto the CCU website, pulling the necessary tariff or looking at our protest letters and saying, these are what the tariffs were, and then doing a price analysis internally at the agency. They didn't do that, and that's why we've had to appeal.
And it's your contention that the rate that was offered by the company that won the bid, has been awarded the bid, is lower than the published rate. And
yes, Your Honor.
And there's no explanation. There's no other explanation for that. That because it's a government that it gets a completely different rate, or because it's a large user that it has a completely different rate than the published rate. And all that can be presented at the hearing to show that it's capable of analysis and that the analysis was not done.
Yes, Your Honor. But I think there is one finer aspect to that, is that DOE should have done that analysis. That's one of the reasons for our appeal, is that the agency simply said, well, we're going to pick the lowest price and we're not going to do any of the analysis the law requires us when somebody says that there's a problem with that price. And so we think the DOE could have done that. We could put on a case that shows that. But I think ultimately, if this case were remanded back to DOE, DOE would have to do that work. And if DOE wanted to come up, and I haven't seen any briefing on this or any law on this, but DOE, I imagine, could have tried to say the protest is denied because they found something you just described, Your Honor, some sort of exemption to government pricing from GTA or something, or that GTA has gone forward to the CCU to get its rates changed for this bid. But there's none of that. Instead, what DOE simply says is, we're not looking at it. It's the lowest price, and that's enough. And we're not going to analyze it. And you shouldn't analyze it either, Mr. Public Auditor, because you're just a procurement person. You're not a utilities person. My fear, Your Honor, ultimately is this, and I think why we're raising this protest is, when I was in law school, Judge, there was an airline called Go Airlines that came in to do inter-island airfare in Hawaii. So they came in and they were selling $45 tickets from Oahu to the Big Island to Kauai to Maui. It was wonderful. What ended up happening was Aloha Airlines, which was doing it at $100, which, you know, covered the cost, covered the labor, covered things, was driven out of the market. So once that falsely low price was set at $45, $50 for inter-island airfare, once the other player was forced to get out, then the rates all went up. And I that's why I think this idea of the falsely low rate is important for DOE to analyze, and ultimately for the OPA on appeal. DOE needed to look at this to make sure that we're following, getting laws, getting prices that comply with the law. And we're not sure that was done here, Judge.
And how do we deal with a court case? I mean, you're the one that brought it up in your initial pleading. I can't unhear that. You're the one that rang that bell and brought it to my attention.
Yes, Your Honor. So obviously, in the notice of appeal, we have an obligation under the statute to let the public auditor's office know of anything that might be related to this case.
I'm trying to get the actual case number here, just so we can get that on our record here. It's Superior Court case
217-21.
That's a case that the Attorney General's office has brought, saying that GTA's got deceptive pricing. It's deceptive pricing because they're not including, I think it was GRT in that case. The idea, though, is that's on the responsibility of would ultimately be, we suggest, on the responsibility of GTA. But on this tariff structure, Your Honor, that's a discrete issue. The reason for this appeal is this tariff structure. But I'm obligated to make sure under 5GCA to let the public auditor know of anything that might touch on this. I'm happy to submit a page to tell you what the status is of that case. And maybe Mr. Stake and I can give you our perspectives. We think that divests this body of jurisdiction. But, you know, I was obligated to let the court know about anything that might be related. That's not a case we brought. That's not a case that DOE brought. It's not a case that covers the CCU's brought. It's a case that the Attorney General's office has brought about deceptive trade, deceptive pricing at GTA, which I think is ultimately relevant if GTA is providing false pricing to DOE. But I'm happy to provide an additional page or additional brief if you're concerned that much about its impact on the public auditor's continuing jurisdiction. Because I do know that if an action is brought in the Superior Court, public auditor's office does not have to be involved in that action. Whether it divests this court of jurisdiction, I have not seen anything like that, Your Honor, and I tell you if I did. That case is related because it goes to the issues of GTA's responsibility, in my suggestion. The AG's offices are providing deceptive prices. We're filing a notice of appeal because DOE didn't look at their pricing provided to DOE. That's the connection, Judge, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Stake.
Thank you, Your Honor. So a few points in reply. Number one, GDOE's position is that PDS's protest, and as I pointed out, goes hand in hand with an analysis of the Telecom Act. Number two, to distinguish between, and again, the allegation is based on a pending litigation, not necessarily an actual evidence of a violation. Number two, the important part to take away from the JRN case that's analogous here is the OPA didn't touch the compliance, investigation, and enforcement of the labor laws. What the OPA and the decision at the and went to actual merits was rooted in the procurement law. So what actually went to merits in that case that opposing counsel references was 5 GCA 5211B, which is the Wage and Determination Act, which is required with every single IFB. You put at the end of every single IFB. So that was rooted in procurement law, and that's how it got to the merits in that situation, in that case. Whereas here, the case is rooted under 12 GCA 12. And then to address the opposing counsel's remarks on the evaluation and award, GDOE evaluated and awarded in terms of the procurement law and the IFB terms and conditions, as you know, as we evidenced through the procurement record. And then again, to conclude, 5 GCA 5211E, no criteria may be used in the bid evaluation that is not set forth in the IFBs. Here, the entirety of the protest is based on allegations outside the terms and conditions of the IFB, wherein Guam law itself prohibits the evaluation of the outside terms to be applied now to the IFB. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, just briefly, if I may, one sentence, please, Judge.
Go ahead.
It's page four of our opposition, Your Honor. Procurement record GDOE 008. DOE requires all bidders seeking the award in this procurement, it's rooted in procurement law, they have to comply with all pertinent and or local laws, rules, regulations relative to the performance of this contract. The tariff that we've submitted in our notice of appeal at Exhibit G that describes what is the tariff for GTA is absolutely a local law regulation statement that is relative to the performance of the contract. So, Your Honor, it is rooted in procurement law. Thank you, Judge.
Okay. The rest of the motions are yours. In what order do you want to argue them?
Yes, Your Honor. So the confidentiality motion, Your Honor, I think we solved on the stipulation. And just on the motion to stay, Your Honor, I'll offer a few brief points on that. We filed a pre-award protest. As a pre-award protest, the automatic stay was triggered. Cases are passing from this office and the Supreme Court of Guam about that, including the DFS 2020 case confirming that the automatic stay is automatically triggered without the need for an injunction or anything else from the beginning of a pre-award protest. DOE's opposition has taken the position that this is actually a post-award protest. DOE's position now, and it's a position that they're advancing based on I don't know what body of law, is that once the agency says who's going to be the awardee, that everything after that is post-award. That is an invitation to absurdity, Your Honor. Because especially in this case where the agency's notice of award, and we put this in our reply, we excerpted it to make sure it's clear, says you don't have any rights under this. We've got a final contract to make. We're moving forward. We have to get things approved and we have to negotiate the terms. So the idea that the agency is taking the perspective that the notice of award is the award, and that any protest that comes after that does not have the benefit of the automatic stay, again, Your Honor, is an invitation to absurdity. And worse, Your Honor, based on some other procurement appeals that I have seen, it is an invitation to corruption. I'm not saying that with DOE and Mr. Steak, but I'm saying, Your Honor, the implications for public policy are grave. If the agencies can take the perspective that they don't have to tell all the bidders who won or lost at the same time, even though the law says all bidders must be treated equally in the procurement. And if the agencies are going to start taking the perspective that the notice of award, not even a contract signature or a purchase for the widget or a purchase order issued for the widget, just a piece of paper that says, I intend to award PARI 1 or PARI 2, the contract, and I'm not going to tell anybody else about the award, then we've got a procurement world where losers don't know they lost. Winners are the only ones who told they won. And the agency says everything's post-award, all the stuff gets delivered, all the items get done. And there's basically, Your Honor, there would be no such thing as a pre-award protest any longer. And the only solution to that, if this invitation from the agency is taken, would be preemptive protests. It would have to be, here's my bid package. And just in case you guys are going to issue this notice of award without telling me, I have to protest now just in case. Because otherwise, everybody goes to a post-award protest. And in particularly, Your Honor, while I can understand maybe there's an argument to be made that a purchase order issued on a small procurement means that the award is done at that moment, you know, because of some UCC kind of understanding of how purchase orders work. In this procurement, where we have explicit language from the agency saying that this award is conditioned on successful execution of a final contract, when the procurement record shows contracts that have no signatures from the Attorney General's office, no signatures from the governor, unless something's been added to that procurement record that I don't have. So maybe Mr. Steak wants to let me know if there's actually an executed governor's contract that hasn't been part of this procurement. And if you look at page 6 of our brief, we excerpted DOE page 15 that shows that every one of the signatures on that proposed contract from Director Fernandez to Mr. Shinahara, even Mr. Sake's signature, Ms. Charfers' review signature, all of those signatures come in after our June 10th protest. So the reason we want to confirm the stay, or we asked to confirm the stay, is because the procurement record was troubling. It was showing communications that were going back and forth after our protest. But now I understand why, because DOE is asking this body and asking Your Honor to flip procurement law on its head and say that once the agency makes it, says this is who we're going to give it to, everything after that is post-award and there are no more automatic stays on the island of Guam. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Steak.
Thank you, Your Honor. So in reply, DOE's position is this motion fails procedurally and on the merits. So I'll start with procedurally. We have three specific issues, each of which issue is fatal to the motion and sufficient on its own to deny it. Procedurally, we'll get into the PDS failed to exhaust the administrative remedies regarding the new protests, 5 GCA 5425, any actual bidder who may be aggrieved in connection with the procurement may protest to a purchasing agency. 5425B, gives the procurement officer the authority to resolve 5425C. If it's not resolved, the procurement officer shall issue a decision in writing. This is a brand new issue, not brought to GDOE's attention. GDOE was not afforded the opportunity to review and provide a decision. Instead, several steps that were provided by law were skipped. So pursuant to 5425, PDS did not exhaust their administrative remedies. GDOE was not afforded the lawful rights. So on those grounds, it should be dismissed. Moving to number two, appellant's new allegations are also not properly before the OPA. as already discussed, 2GAR 12-112, the public auditor shall determine a decision on a protest in accordance with the laws. These issues were never a part of their protest. Appellant did not afford GDV the opportunity, and therefore it didn't get appealed to the OPA. Therefore, this matter was not properly appealed, is not properly before the OPA. Lastly, number three, for procedural, the appellant violated, the appellant violated the requirement to raise this issue in its protest within 14 days after the appellant knew or should have known about the facts given rise thereto. 5 GCA 5425A, which requires the protest to be in writing from 14 days. So both parties can say that on June 4, the notice of award was given, and all these issues and allegations stem from the June 4 notice of award, where GDOE awarded. On August 31, 2021, appellant improperly raised these new issues regarding the award more than 60 days after the appellant knew of the award. Therefore, this motion also violates 5425A and should be denied. Okay, so to get into the merits, so regarding the stay, the issue here is that the appellant's protest did not trigger the automatic stay because DOE's position is the protest was after the award. 5 GCA 5425G, as well as 2GAR 9101E, an automatic stay is applied only when a protest is filed before an award is issued. And as we said before, on June 4, GDOE awarded. On June 9, respective, and June 10, the PDS protested. Therefore, it was after the award. And then to get into Mr. Walsh's reply. So in Guam Imaging Consultants 2004, Guam 15, it's distinguishable here because that's an RFP. RFPs have a stark difference between IFBs, where an RFPs have a significant amount of gray area, which requires the parties to enter into negotiations. Whereas an IFB, price is the only consideration. The terms are out in front of you. So there is nothing left after. Teleguam Holdings versus the Territory of Guam 2018, Guam 5, also distinguishable in this, in that it was a notice recommending award versus the notice of the award. And then to cite, Your Honor, the US Code 41 USC Section 3702 sealed bids, which is the IFB. So the criteria for awarding a contract, the executive agency shall evaluate the bids in accordance with law without discussion and shall award a contract with reasonable promptness to the responsible source whose bid conforms to the solicitation and is most advantageous to the government. 3702C, the award of a contract shall be made in transmitting in writing or by electronic means notice of the award to the successful bidder. And then to get into locally, GDOE followed the local laws regarding award 5211G, the contract shall be awarded, which is, mirrors the federal statute. 2GAR 3109N1, which also mirrors 5211G, GDOE followed this. 3109P, 2GAR 3109P, documentation of award. Following award, a record showing the basis for determining the successful bidder shall be made a part of the procurement file. 3109Q, written notice of the award shall be sent to the successful bidders. And then, Your Honor, to get into the practice, I have a fair amount of contracts that we do every fiscal year, and the gap from award to execution is huge. There is a lot that can happen between award to execution of the contract. So the law actually provides for this middle ground. So for example, once an IFB is awarded, the law provides the opportunity to correct mistakes after the award, cancellations post-award, to address lack of funding post-award, Your Honor. So there is a significant gap, and in practice, I think that's why this the award and the execution are two separate entities. And in this case, DOE followed the regulations regarding the award in the procurement code as well as the IFB itself. And then, sorry, one second. So I guess in that sense, Your Honor, GDOE's position is that we followed the rules and regulations. This was awarded on June 4, and this is after the award. And then, sorry, just to get into the injunctive relief, it's going to be the exact same position as what we briefed, that the OPA lacks jurisdiction as well to impose the injunctive relief on a purchasing agency, referring to the JJ Global appeal case. And that's all. Thank you, Your Honor.
And where along that continuum of time between June the 4th or and the 10th, when the or after the 4th, and the time that it's fine, you say that the contract is executed, where in that continuum of time is a timely protest by an appellant timely to be able to get a stay on continuing that award, I mean that contract?
Your Honor,
that you're saying that on the 4th, when you announce the award, that it's done. I mean, there's you can't appeal after that because that's the award date.
Yes, Your Honor, the department's position is that when this opened on April 28, I believe, the award on June 4 is when it's no longer, the stay would no longer apply at that time, yes.
So when can they appeal and to what avail?
In this situation, from April 28 until June 4 to get this stay before. And again, I think this has a lot to do with the IFB versus an RFP, whereas an IFB, the terms are posted. What's new is the price. So they have it boils down to the price. It's not as much room for litigation as opposed to an RFP, where they have to enter negotiations prescribed by law.
So you're agreeing with Mr. Walsh that an appellant would need to do a preemptive appeal to stay any proceedings even before you've made a decision to award?
I think, Your Honor, the department would respectfully disagree on those grounds and argue that it should have been prior to the
Well, I know you're saying it should be prior to June the 4th, but prior to June the 4th would seem to have been preemptive. It didn't know that you had awarded it to somebody else besides themselves. I'm going to protest just in case that I don't get the bid. So everything has to stay.
So, Your Honor, that does happen. In practice, we do have several of those as well. But to be honest, DOE's position in this case is that this procedurally shouldn't get to the merits because the June 4, even if they disagree on the June 4 was the award, and if they had an issue following the 4th, they had that was the time scale, 14 days from that, as well as not giving us the opportunity to brief this at the start. Rather than skipping the legally prescribed steps beforehand.
But in the case of a line department as opposed to an autonomous agency like was pulled off at GIAA in the DFS case, where they awarded it on Friday night and signed the contract with and got all the signatures on, with a line department, is there no time that no good time that anybody can appeal or protest and get an answer and be within all the time periods, or is it done when you announce?
Your Honor, speaking from personal experience, we have had protests prior to bid statuses where they would then establish these issues. It has happened, Your Honor.
No, I understand the protest, but how about the appeal to us? I mean, I surely don't want this office inundated with dozens of preemptive procurement appeals because I don't know, because contractors out there aren't sure what the agencies are going to do, or at least give a period. I mean, unless I'm mistaken, in federal practice, there is a short period within which they're given to time to file a protest, and nothing has happened during that period after the award is announced. You're saying that in this case, the announcement of the award and everybody being told on the 4th is the award of the contract, and though there is no contract signed yet, any appeal to try to stop the signing of the contract is too late and should be allowed to move forward.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that an IFB versus an RFP is important to note here. Because this is an IFB, there's not as much left to finish or to negotiate towards. In this case, it's simply the price that is the determining factor. So, yes, Your Honor, you're correct. That's the position of the department.
Mr. Walsh, it's your closing.
Yes, Your Honor. So on the stay issue, I think, Mr. Justice, you understand the significant issues here. I understand Mr. Stakes attempted a distinction between, you know, an RFP and an IFB. Their own award contemplates further terms and conditions and explicitly informs the parties who received the notice that there are no rights conferred under this. So again, Your Honor, this is not, you know, a purchase order for the widgets, and the widgets have to be bought tomorrow. While DOE's practice is, and I do actually think it's good practice, they take some time here from the notice of award to actually moving forward with contract execution, unlike some agencies like the GIAA did. That means nothing in this situation if everything becomes post-award from the minute the notice is issued. And that can't happen. I think, as Your Honor correctly noted, the FARs do recognize a stand-down period to deal with this issue. So you don't sort of, you know, cut off any meaningful appellate rights at all, which is what DOE's invitation here is. And on the idea, Your Honor, that this is procedurally teed up incorrectly, I think we only really need to look at the OPA's website to see all the reported cases of motions to confirm the existence of the automatic stay without the need for a protest on the lack of an automatic stay first to the agency. And I think we know why that is, because it really makes no sense for me to require PDS to go back to DOE to say, hey, DOE, I know you're violating the stay. Are you sure? Do you really want to violate the stay? You know, we know their perspective on it, that there is no stay because it's post-award. And finally, Your Honor, I think this is significant. If to the extent that the Public Auditor's Office believes that there may be a 14-day clock where we have to now initiate protest number 4 or 3, or, you know, we get to this world of protesting every issue instead of a de novo review that the statute allows, we're just going to have, you know, 26 protests once we start looking at the procurement record and finding all the flaws. I have not seen an executed contract on this agreement. The procurement record, which is obligated, DOE's got an obligation to update the procurement record. I have not seen Governor Lourdes Leon-Guerrero's signature on a contract here, or Attorney General Levin Camacho. So if Mr. Stake is going to tell me today that does exist, then I suppose I could, if we're really going to go down the rabbit hole, bring a protest within 14 days of learning that they moved forward with a contract execution, and then have DOE weigh in on whether or not they think that was right or wrong. But we already know their position, and we don't work in the world of futility on this island, I hope. you know, we want to move things along. So I think everything that DOE is inviting the OPA to do is in the best interest of DOE, it appears, but turns established procurement practice on its head, Your Honor, and the implications to Guam procurement public policy are significant, especially when, if there are agencies who don't use Mr. Steak's good judgment to wait a few days between actually getting a contract signed by the next level, if they're doing it over the weekend, and then we're also having practice and precedent on the island where the agencies are purposely not telling the losers that they lost and only the winners that they won, we're going to create a world where the winners are told that they won, contracts are signed, purchase orders go out, the losers never hear about it, and then what do you have left for protest? Nothing. Now, while I am fortunate enough to have clients who are willing to engage with these issues, you know, that's not everybody. I mean, there are people who have procurement issues who do not have the funds to engage an attorney and do not have the funds to bring a righteous protest because the statutes of the procurement law don't allow them attorney's fees if they win. So, you know, unless I'm going to start doing pro bono work for folks, and tell my kids, well, that we're just going to go see if we can go and help everybody out there. This world is writ large on the island, Your Honor. And DOE's invitation in this particular case should be rejected. And perhaps maybe if Your Honor, I just could suggest this, if you don't want to actually take my invitation to engage and just say this all needs to be put to a halt on a minimum level in this case, DOE said there's more to do and there are no signatures on the final contract. So if DOE really wanted to hold to the idea that notice of awards mean the process is over, it's all post-award, they need to not have this language in their notice of award. Maybe it's just a sloppy cut and paste job, but if the notice of award means you're on the hook and we're good to go and there's nothing else to do because it's not an RFP, all we got to do is write you a check because we know the amount, it's your lowest price, that should say this. All this says is there's more to do. So this is clearly in that zone of a notice of award, it's pre-award, it's a pre-award protest. The automatic stay has been in place and we ask the OPA to rule accordingly. Thank you, Your Honor. And I think that's it for my motions.
Is there anything else, Mr. Steak?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to touch on the award versus execution again, it's just that our position is, they're two entities. And it's recognized in the law that they're different entities and that there's lawfully prescribed situations to address that gap in between. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, we'll take the matter under advisement. Prepare to go to hearing next week, unless you guys, I'm going to await the certification from the two of you on the GTA case that's at district court. I mean at Superior Court, because that still bothers me, and that's why I started off this morning's hearing with that. Because I'm sure the court doesn't like my stepping in on where if they're supposed to be the one that's doing it.
I will contact Mr. Steak on that, Your Honor. And if we can make a joint filing, we will, or at least our different perspectives if they turn out to be different judge. Well, I'll get that in the next day or so, if that's okay.
Please. But we'll take it pending. Receipt of that, and just might be talking aloud for a second. Has there ever been a case where never mind. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Then. I'll call you, Mr. Steak.
Get me that notification in the next couple of days.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, everyone. We're off the record at 10:56 a.m.